You've crushed it. You've made millions. But let us ask you something. If you stop working today, how long would it all last? For most people, that answer, it's not great.
Right now, everything you have built, your house, your car, the vacations you love, relies on you. If you stop, the money stops.
That's exactly why we created a community for people just like you. No fluff, no hustle or energy, just real self-made millionaires helping each other create wealth that actually lasts.
Ready to build a legacy? Join us now at join.builtbeyondme.com and take the first step towards lasting wealth.
Imagine this, no more grinding for another 10, 15, or 20 years just to keep everything afloat. What if your wealth could start working harder than you do?
In our community, we'll show you how to invest in income-producing assets like multifamily properties and build-to-rent developments. No messy tenant management, no complicated learning curve, just real scalable wealth.
It's not about making millions anymore. It's about keeping it, growing it, and passing wealth beyond you.
Don't just make millions, make them last. Build a future, build freedom. Join our community now at join.wealthbeyondme.com. And that is join.wealthbeyondme.com.
Have you ever wondered why some people always seem to be ahead of the curve, catching every opportunity before anyone else? In this video, I'm going to break down where you can go and how you can see the massive profits in real estate with just four market shifts. As one of my mentors always say, principles are microcosms of each other. Meaning that if a principle applies to one arena, it also applies to another. So with this in mind, let's talk about the principle of the tipping point. So the crucial point about this is that small shifts can lead to giant leaps. Where we're talking about the shifts early enough, where we're catching it before anyone else can see it, it will become giant waves. So you could think of this as a droplet of water that can become a huge wave, or a small drop of snow becomes an avalanche.
Hello, I'm Pommy.
And I'm Nancy.
Together we make the Kitty Sisters. We're apartment syndicators, entrepreneurs, and educators with big dreams and a $300 million multifamily apartment portfolio.
We're into helping successful entrepreneurs and founders who have a passion for real estate and $100K to $5 million to invest, all aiming to turn their business profits into a lasting legacy through income-producing asset investment.
This is Cashflow Multipliers, a podcast dedicated to your financial freedom and the lifestyle you deserve.
The secret of this is all about recognizing the game-changing moments long before it becomes obvious. It's not about catching something that's really difficult to find. It's really about finding the things that are actually obvious, but they're just not obvious to a lot of people at the moment. So the tipping point is about that critical moment where minor shifts triggers those big changes. It's all about recognizing when those small changes are happening before that massive big wave. So, you know, a contemporary example of this would be Steve Jobs. He's one of the most influential business person in the world, not just because of the Apple product, but because of a whole bunch of other industries that he actually helped create and actually help grow even further. To discuss some areas where we saw this pattern recognition and Steve Jobs' ability to actually foresee and leverage these trends, you can think of first the iPhone. So before the iPhone, there were already cellular phones. You had like the Motorola's, the really big ones, and you had the flip phones, the Razr, and then you had the Nokia phones. Those were all telephones that were mobile, but that was pretty much its limitations, right? Nokia added some texting capabilities. You could take some pictures, but they were super low res and then was not really worth really taking pictures. So all that changed with the introduction of the iPhone. What Steve Jobs recognized was that there was a growing consumer demand for devices that combines communication, entertainment, internet access, and business mobility in a really elegant and simple to use way. And basically, he transformed the functionality and the stylistic features of the iMac, and he needs to combine all that into a small device, which became the iPhone. So with this kind of insight, the iPhone became revolutionary, and the smartphone industry was never the same ever since. Another one of the areas that Steve Jobs saw and recognized trends before it became obvious to everyone else was iTunes, iPods, and iTunes. So Steve Jobs, at the time, keep in mind, like, and I know Gen Zs probably don't know this, but like before, there were actually CDs, and before that, there were cassette tapes, and before that, there's records, right? So prior to the advent of digital music, people had to physically go to stores and buy devices, buy cassette tapes, buy CDs in order to play them. And I don't know how many songs are on a CD, but let's say there's 12, probably similarly to a cassette tape, and there's two sides to it, and you put in thing and then you play it to one side and then you have to play the other side. These are physical devices that can wear out over time. And so what ended up happening was, I think in around the year 2000, 2001, Napster came around and were illegally, was a platform that illegally allowed people to exchange converted music into MP3 files. So basically, now there's a whole bunch of, not streaming music, there's a whole bunch of access to digital music that was technically illegal at the time. So what Steve Jobs did was he said, hey, I recognize that there needs to be a simple and seamless way people need to store and manage these music instead of having a Walkman or a CD man or something. I don't know, that's what it's called. But basically like a CD player, a portable CD player. How about we create this really elegant device that can store hundreds of songs? And in fact, you can listen to music without having to change out those batteries. You can just actually charge the device. And guess what? Instead of actually having these piracy programs where, like, similar to Napster's, where people were just illegally exchanging music, why don't we create a platform where musicians actually get to sell the music and at least get some royalty from the music that are being exchanged? Because you couldn't stop that momentum anymore. You couldn't close a Pandora's box. Once digital music happened, you recognize that physical buying of CDs and cassette tapes were not going to be something that people are on the whole are going to be doing. Even though now today there's records that are still being sold, but that's like a small, tiny portion of the entire music buying population. So that transformed the music industry. He did the same thing with Pixar. He saw the potential of a computer-generated animation in its infancy, and he invested heavily in Pixar's success. And so therefore, it became Toy Story, and as they say, the rest is history. And this is actually similar to what I heard recently from Tony Robbins. So Tony Robbins stated that in order for us all to survive the AI revolution or any revolution in the future, there's like a couple skill sets that each person needs to have in order to have this happen. And the first one that Tony Robbins talks about is recognizing patterns. And this is exactly what I just went over with you with Steve Jobs. He was able to see patterns, foresee them prior to everyone else, meaning that he saw the obvious before it became obvious to everyone else. That's an important characteristic that Tony Robbins says everyone needs to have. But more important than that, like if you just have the ability to recognize the pattern, but you can't do anything with the pattern, then that's pointless. So therefore, it goes to his second point. He says you have to be able to take action on those patterns. So in the case of Steve Jobs, he saw the iPhone revolution and he was able to, he saw the movement towards people needing a device that has a combination of different capacities. So he created the iPhone, similar to iTunes and iPods and similar to Pixar. So those two characteristics are significant. Now, the third one is even more powerful if you're able to do this. And this is instead of actually seeing the pattern by itself or taking action on the pattern, he says you need to create the pattern. So that's a really powerful scenario where imagine you're playing music and you just started out, you're learning how to play the piano. The first thing you do is you're going to replicate someone else's song, probably in a like a hard down version, like Mary Had a Little Lamb. And you're like, why am I playing this over and over? The idea is that you're actually going to become a person who can actually recognize these patterns and repeat it. And now the third step is creating your own music. So in order to be like resilient in this kind of environment right now, you have to be able to recognize patterns, take action on patterns, and even better than that, create your own patterns. I think of creating your own patterns similarly to it would be like Uber created their own pattern. So people used to travel either by their own car, mass transit, or they take taxis going around places. So Uber, instead of taking that same mindset and just enhancing it, they said, no, why don't we do this? Why don't we let regular people on the street, they don't need to have a taxi medallion, they don't need to get special licensing. Why don't we let them actually drive around and someone on an app will say, hey, I want to be picked up, and that transaction occurs. And these are two private parties that are doing this, not some company. So that is creating a pattern. Similar to that would be even like, I think even like cryptocurrency came along and said, hey, instead of having a centralized control or currency, why don't we create a decentralized system, something like that. So those are ability for people to actually create patterns. Why is this important? It's important for us investors because there's this psychological factor, which is called the mass investor psychology, that typically drives a lot of our decision making. And unless we recognize that we're in these patterns, we're not going to be able to break out of them. So this means that mass investor psychology refers to the collective emotional belief and behavior that drives the market as a whole. A lot of times we want to believe that human beings are rational decision-making creatures, but we don't really base our actions purely on fundamentals. And like a lot of time, our actions are actually dictated by herd mentality, which is based on fear, greed, and euphoria, all on that entire spectrum. So the herd mentality, literally, like you think of lemmings, there's been many instances where, followed by instinct, lemmings would follow together, would group together in large groups and have these weird scenarios where they go through, like, they'll plunge into lakes, they'll jump off cliffs, only because someone else started doing it without questioning why this is happening. And unfortunately, there'll be tons of lemmings that will die. And this is where we have to be careful as investors, where we're not just following the lead that's happening just because someone else is doing it. And I think like one of the really profound quote about this was by Warren Buffett. He says, "Be fearful when others are greedy. Be greedy when others are fearful." This is a really powerful quote because he's telling us that if everyone else is on the sideline and are afraid to take action, that's probably the best time to take action. And if it's people are hunkering down, then take action. But if people are all in the frenzy, then that's the time to back up. It means that small moves are always going to happen before you see the all clear sign. So when you see small patterns, it's going to be obvious to all, to the masses at the beginning, right? It's obvious not to everyone else. It's obvious to you, but it won't be obvious to anyone else. So you have to check for those small signs before you get the entire all clear sign, because at that point, it's probably going to be too late. So the easiest way to spot these type of pattern is just take a step back and strip away any of the emotional baggage that comes with investing. I know a lot of people, obviously, one of the big things about investing, and I hear it from people who don't want to invest or hate investing, is that it's not that they don't like investing, it's just that they don't like losing money investing. I mean, no one likes losing money to anything, to gambling, to taxes, to a whole bunch of other stuff. So I get that. But losing money isn't necessarily the outcome that will happen because of investing. So therefore, it's not because you invested, you lost money. It's because you invested in poor deals that you lost money, or you invested in bad stocks that you lost money, or you invested in some random meme cryptocurrency and you lost money. So that's really where the issue is. What this means is that if it's hot in the streets, it's cold in the sheets. So I'm referring to the financial spreadsheet here and the returns. Okay, so not anything else. So don't think of anything else there. Okay, so how does this apply to real estate? The things that we can look at in terms of real estate fundamentals that can help us recognize patterns before the mass investor psychology kicks in, because at that point it'll be too late. So I'm going to break down four of these shifts that are happening right now that are big trends that are going to impact real estate going in the future. Okay. Number one trend is amongst millennials and Gen Z homeowners. These two groups, millennials is now the largest cohort after them. Below that is exceeding that of the boomer population. So they are the largest cohorts, and their age ranges from like 30 to 40, and Gen Zs are just below that. Now, what we're seeing is that they're delaying entry into purchasing a home. The postponement of home is high, and primarily it's due to the price of the property, the high mortgage rates that makes it so it's unaffordable. That by itself already signals to people who are in real estate to understand that, hey, they need to live somewhere. So if they're not going to be able to afford to purchase homes, their next viable option would be to rent. So that's already one of the patterns that you can see. The second trend that is really significant and represents also another big shift is the aging population and senior housing. Not just in the United States, but globally, we're seeing a huge aging population. And actually, there is, in some countries, there's actually negative population growth, which becomes a huge factor in countries like Japan and China, etc. So senior populations are increasing their share, or have increased for the entire population's pie from 21% in 2000 to 29% in 2017. And they're projected, meaning that out of 100% of the population, seniors are projected to be 33% of the population by 2040. This means that if you service them in terms of housing, if you service them in terms of healthcare, that's probably going to be an area where you're going to see a lot of growth going forward. Another thing is you're seeing the number of seniors living alone. So number of people, seniors ages 75 and older that are living alone is expected to double. So in 2017, that number was 8.1 million. And by 2040, it's expected to double to about 17.3 million. living alone means more rental units because you're not fully utilizing the existing housing. Number three within this trend is what this means is that the occupancy rate for senior housing will increase, and it's expected to actually increase significantly by the end of 2026. Another one is aging in place. So aging in place is a very interesting phenomenon because in the housing market, traditionally, what you see is someone comes into a starter home, they grow their family, maybe they have one or two kids. As their kids gets older, they may move into a transition to a larger home to accommodate for their larger family. And as the kids start leaving to go to college, the empty nesters then now downsize to a smaller home. That's kind of like the scenario, typically like 3 to 4 homes in that span of like 30 to 40 years. With the increase in property tax, with the increase in mortgage rates, there's a lot more people aging in place. So 95% of seniors now prefer to age in place. And that's keeping about 1.6 million homes off the market. Again, this all tells a story. It's not one thing that actually speaks to the pattern, but the combination of that speaks to the need for additional rental properties. Another point within trend number two is household growth. So we're seeing in Asian and Latin America and a lot of other, and even European families, it's normal to see multi-generational homes. In the United States, that hasn't been the case as much, but we're seeing more households where there's multi-generational family. And at some point, those millennials and Gen Zs will start to have to move out. So their household formation will start happening as well. Okay, so those are the two trends. Trend number three is business relocation and economic drivers. A couple weeks ago, Kentucky Fried Chicken announced it was moving its headquarters from Kentucky, hence its name Kentucky Fried Chicken, to Plano, Texas. So this really illustrates how business relocation can create economic hubs and attract new residents and drive out housing demand. Clear example, we talk about Plano, Texas again. So in Plano, Texas, probably 2000, I don't remember exact year, but like 2010, 11, something around there. Someone can correct me. Toyota announced it was moving its headquarters from California, Southern California, to Plano, Texas. And that completely changed the dynamic of that submarket and that specific submarket. So that included Plano, McKinney, a couple other cities that sort of like lumps together. And since then, there's been way more movement and businesses moving to the area. The PGA Tour moved their headquarters there recently. Universal Studios is building a theme park there. A whole bunch of other businesses have moved to that specific location. And that's because of the more friendly, welcoming business environment. And how does that major relocation actually impact multifamily? So in 2025, there's Dallas, Texas is actually number one for corporate headquarters relocation. So that speaks to why KFC and others have moved there. Sunbelt states in general. So Sunbelts are states that are kind of like the bottom portion of the United States, like starting from Arizona to New Mexico to Texas, all the way to like Florida and Georgia. So that's the Sunbelt state. So areas like Charlotte, Atlanta, Nashville are also attracting a lot of corporate interest as well. The impact of multifamily on this one is increasing housing demand. So one of our properties is in Rogers, Arkansas. Probably about middle of last year, Walmart announced that they were closing a few of their satellite headquarters in New York, I think, and also in Chicago, and a couple other places, and actually relocating those workers to Bentonville, Arkansas, which is right above our city. What we saw was the traditional, as you guys know, the traditional real estate actually, like it slows, the rental leasing slows down in like December and January and picks up in like spring and summer as families are relocating just to kind of like align itself with schools, right? So what we saw happening was there were an influx of renters in January that we didn't understand where it came from. And so we asked our property manager, like, hey, can you explain what's causing this increase? And they said, yeah, it's like they had tranches of relocation coming from Walmart. And so we can see that directly impacting our occupancy or at least our demand for housing for our property. And that's one example how that increased housing demand. Also, of course, with higher demand comes rent growth. And that's expected to accelerate alongside of higher occupancy as well. low vacancy is something that is prevalent right now in a lot of the hot multifamily markets. In spite of the fact that there are still new deliveries, multifamily in Q4 of 2024 actually had a net, were able to absorb a lot of these units, and leading candidates for that was Dallas and Houston were amongst two of the cities that actually saw that coming in. Positive impact of these migrations and from corporation relocating, obviously job creation. A lot of these corporations are bringing better, higher paying jobs to the area. Economic growth as well. So when you have one business coming in, it's not in a silo. There are going to be other supporting businesses that actually also prosper. Even restaurants, of course, like our apartments as well will also be possibly impacted. This really helps with workforce mobility. And also, now that these companies, so for us in multifamily, I don't consider Dallas a secondary market. But in terms of the general public, they consider Dallas or Atlanta and all these cities secondary market. So when I say secondary market in this context, it's like Dallas and Atlanta. Like the primary, the gateway market would be like Los Angeles, Seattle, Chicago, New York, etc. So companies that are expanding to secondary markets, aka Dallas, et cetera, are creating these new opportunities for actually even multifamily developments. So multifamily development has been really, really hot for the past few years. But there's been a few factors that have slowed it down in 2025. And that gets us to point trend number four. There were a lot of people that were really, really excited about getting into constructing new properties as the supply was really dwindling. And so probably 2022, 2023, there were a lot of projects that were in the planning stages. Keep in mind that just because I want to build today doesn't mean that I can start, right? I have to first locate the land, which takes time. We are constantly underwriting land right now. So if you guys have like 18 to 30 acres of raw land in prime locations, you can DM us and we can talk about that offline because we are looking for that. Especially in like the DFW area. So you could see that there were a whole bunch of interest of doing new construction. But what happened? As interest rates start increasing, it actually halted a whole bunch of projects. So there's a whole bunch of projects that came online that couldn't be completed. And there were new projects that were about to get started that also had to be halted. Kind of like an antidote to this, kind of like countering to this. Well, I don't even know what the... Okay, forget about what I just said there. But basically, interestingly, contrary to that, for our own project, which we are doing a build-to-rent construction project up with townhomes, we did things a little bit differently. So therefore, we weren't impacted by rising interest rate as much as others were. So when you're doing construction, there's two phases. So there's the horizontal development and there's the vertical construction. Horizontal development, as the name implies, does everything that's below the ground or horizontal. This is like doing the sewer line, leveling the streets, putting in all the necessary gas line utilities, blah, 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 all that stuff. For us, instead of electing to get a loan from the lender at that point in the project to start that project, we elected to just raise capital and just fund that ourselves. There's a couple benefits to that. The first one was there were no pressure to complete the project based on artificial timelines. So based on us reading the term sheets, there are a lot of the lenders were trying to restrict how much time we had to do the construction for horizontal. Well, of course, we want to finish that project as fast as possible, but we're not going to stick ourselves under an arbitrary timeline that can end up biting us in the butt. So, and with interest rates being super high at the time, we said, you know what, we've raised enough money, let's not get a loan at this point. And then like fast forward to December of last year, 2024, hey, it's about time for us to start the vertical phase. And so at that point, we decided it makes sense to get a construction loan. The cool thing about the way the construction loan works is that we have the loan in place now, but we haven't started paying any payments to it. Why? Because we actually haven't drawn any money from it. The only time the construction loans are payments are due is as people are drawing or like you can start doing vertical constructions and then you're starting to take money. So as long as we have funds in reserve, we're not going to be using that. And so the timeline for constructions, it's sort of like this. So therefore, at the beginning, you're not going to have a lot of draws. And in the middle, you're going to have a whole bunch because you have a lot of things happening, buildings, in framing, doing the plumbing, electrical, all that good stuff, right? All those things are happening. And then like as you sort of finish off the project, it sort of looks like this. then you have a bit less. So in the case of our project, I digress, but in the case of our project, we haven't had any slowdown because of that. But unfortunately, a lot of other projects weren't put together this way. And so there's a lot of construction delays that's happening. The result of this will be that there's going to be way less properties that will come online. There's going to be in 1 or 2 years, you're going to see significant supply constraints. And not to mention the tariff that just got kicked in, right? Canadian tariff was 25%. Interestingly, we elected to buy more lumber ahead of time in order to sort of circumvent this problem for our project. So for just the amount of lumber we're able to buy at this moment, it saved us like $30,000, $40,000 because we paid on Friday instead of Monday. That's $30,000, $40,000 in just 3 days, right? From Friday paying for it versus paying for our Monday, we saved $30,000 to $40,000. And that's on like a couple buildings and not the whole project, obviously. So with that, again, market overall. So if you're looking at this, like if you hear the media or you listen to the news, you then may feel like, hey, real estate is in a pickle and is not something you want to get into. But if you are smart, or you're a smart investor, you want to pick up the obvious before it becomes obvious to the masses, then right now is the right time to start investing. A lot of the institutional players are already coming in. They're saying what we're saying. They're saying, we like to come in before the all clear sign happens because that's when you make money. If it's obvious to everyone, you're not going to be making any money. The market will continue to stabilize from now to the end of the year, and we're going to see a lot less construction projects being completed. Again, this will mean that there'll be less supply available as corporations are migrating to the area that you're investing in. There's not going to be a lot of units. This is good for both the projects, construction projects like ours that's happening, and also existing buildings as well. But there's going to be regional variations because there's going to be somewhere that are going to have strong demand, and then there's going to be oversupply. I believe Nashville, Tennessee is one example right now, but there's an oversupply happening because there were a whole bunch of building that came online, but not enough demand for it. But there's our other regions, similar to what I just mentioned, Dallas, Houston, were led the way in Q4 of 2024 of having net absorptions, meaning that they were able to take on, lease up more units even as it comes online. The demand is still robust. While 2025 may have not been as strong in terms of like sales or sale volume, I'm seeing more action and more activity happening. This means that investors in deals that may have strong, even if they have strong fundamentals, but they have a mismatched loan, they will really need to sell at this point. I know I've been saying that for the last couple of years, but I promise you, like, it's legitimately going to happen. I see that right now. I see that with friends who have massive portfolios. I see that with people that have billions of dollars of portfolio and what they have to go through now. So if you are prepared today, both as a limited partner or a general partner, you will profit because right now, as people are still hiding in some, you know, hole somewhere, you're going to be able to take advantage of the pattern that you're going to see before anyone else. So if nothing else, make sure that you start seeing the pattern and picking up on what those are. And more importantly than that, like, take actions on those patterns, because unless you do that, this is not going to be fruitful. I would say, like, if you don't know this today, and I think that's totally fine, but after listening to this video or watching this video, if you still don't take action in the next year, 6 months, a year, 2 years, 3 years, then you're going to feel like, man, I should have, would have, could have. And that's not what I want for you guys. Okay. So that's it for this one. If you like this episode and got value from this, I host a free community for accredited investors, high-level entrepreneurs, business owners, and founders. It's called Wealth Beyond Me, and it's all about creating wealth that goes beyond you. Because real wealth isn't just about making money, it's about keeping more of it, multiplying it, and passing it on. So if you're serious about elevating your wealth game, you need to be in there.
We can't wait to begin this journey with you. Check us out at thekittysisters.com/podcast.